Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to a special online event. It's called Discover the Mystical Feminine Map to Transformation, Hidden in Christianity's Four Gospels. My name is Stephen Dine. I'm the founder and president of the Shift Network, and I'm really thrilled to get to adventure into the heart and soul of the Christian tradition in a wholly new way with a remarkable pioneering teacher. His name is Alexander John Shaya, and he's the founder and director of Quadratos, Four Paths, One Journey. And we're really going to be taking a deep dive into some parts of the Christian tradition that you may not have been exposed to before and really doing some experiential work together. And also want to let everybody know up front that we're going to have a chance to go much deeper with Alexander John in a brand new program. So more to come on that. So with that said, welcome to Alexander John.
Stephen, thank you. It's an honor. I've listened to you many, many times introducing other courses, and it's a delight to be here.
Well, it's great to have you as well. I know you're coming to us from Spain as well, which is sort of gives an interesting international flavor to what we're doing as well. And so let's talk a little bit about, first of all, your journey that put you on the path to really becoming a Christian mystic and helping us to unveil new aspects of this tradition in a way that really brings depth and richness to our spiritual lives.
I really owe a great deal to my Lebanese grandmother, my mother's mother, my Sitho. I'm first generation Lebanese. My entire family was born in Lebanon. My parents came to the States as children. I was born in the States, but I was raised on the lap of my grandmother. And she could not read or write. She couldn't read or write in Arabic or Aramaic or English. So what she would do is she would chant the gospel stories to me, which I assume is the ancient way in the Middle East. People in those villages before reading and writing would memorize the text through chant on Sunday mornings. And so I would hear her chanting in a mixture of Arabic and Aramaic these stories. And I learned that there's a melody, there's a texture that's underneath the words that's certainly as important as the words themselves. But growing up in Birmingham, Alabama, in the 1950s, we were on the other side of the tracks. I experienced my grandmother's house being burned down by the KKK, and there was a moment for me, a seven-year-old boy, when all of my grandmother's chanting became a deep truth in my life. And that was just after her house had been burnt down and everything that she had brought from Lebanon had been in the ashes of that house. And on the next Sunday, we were gathered as we always were with her. And even in those days, when I say we, it was some 70 of us. And she said grace, as she usually said. And then she looked around the room, and we all knew you do not pick up your fork until she picks up her fork. And she looked at each one of us, and then very quietly and very insistently, she said, "No hate, no hate, no hate." And somehow in that moment, as a small boy, I wanted to learn how to have such an anchor in a time when everything seemed to be chaos and tumult. Her only desire was really to lift our family. And all of those years of sitting on her lap and hearing the gospel text chanted, I knew that they were not words, that there was a presence underneath the words, which was something greater than the words themselves. So I've gone through a long journey in my personal and my professional life to come to understand Christianity in what I call an indigenous way, in the Aramaic way of the Middle East, which is very, very different from what most people know of Western Christianity today, which is very European and sort of dogmatic. Whereas for me, the Aramaic heart of Christianity is about a glorious tradition of the earth, one might say of the feminine, and mystical. not intellectual concepts as much as a deep experience of a presence. And we'll go on to talk about my discovery that the original collectors of what we have today in the Bible, especially when it came to the collection of the gospel texts, and I know there were some 50 texts written. I love some of the texts that are not chosen in the Bible because they wanted to give us not just the teachings of Jesus, but they wanted to give us the universal map to transformation. And so my work brings together, and what I'm going to share in this course is this mystical earth tradition Christianity that is there in the Aramaic language of Jesus, and how Christianity knew that the universal path of transformation has got four main paths to it. And what they were looking to give us in the four Gospels was they wanted one gospel for each of the four paths. And we're going to discover the Gospels in an entirely new way. I think you're going to discover Christianity in an entirely new way, but this course is not about Christianity as much as it is, if you're Buddhist, you've got the four paths and the four noble truths. And if you're Jewish, you've got the four paths in the great story of Exodus. And if you're Hindu, you've got the four paths in the cycle of Shiva and Parvati. And you've got the four paths as the core in all the great indigenous traditions. And you've got the four paths in all the great psychologies, and on and on and on and on. So yes, I want to open up the Christian Gospels in an incredible new way. But I also want to welcome everybody of every tradition or no tradition. I want to give you what I think of is a key to the cosmos. And that may sound a little bit overblown, but when you've got a map, you have a better sense of where you are, what to do where you are, and what comes next. And that map exists at the heart of all our great traditions, from shamanism to all contemporary traditions today. And that map is right there in the four Christian Gospels.
Well, what an extraordinary life path that propelled you to bringing forward this teaching. And I can already tell this is going to be revelatory to look at these four Gospels as four archetypal paths that are sort of more universal. But let's talk about the flavor of the Gospels and what's getting transmitted, the more earthy and feminine kind of. So I wonder if you could explore that a little bit more for us. So like, what was it that was sort of more essential that might have gotten lost in translation into the European cultures and languages?
And absolutely. And it got lost very early, Stephen. Aramaic is a language of the earth. It's entirely about nature and agriculture. It's not conceptual at all. One of the things I like to say is that in Aramaic, which was the language of prayer in my childhood, and it was the language of Sunday morning at church, you can't say a word like right or wrong in Aramaic. That's a Greek concept word. In Aramaic, if you're trying to describe an action, you've got to use an agricultural metaphor. And so you can talk about a seed, or you can talk about a bud, or you can talk about the early formation of fruit, or that the fruit is now green, or the fruit is ripe and ready to be eaten, or now the fruit is fermenting and falling off the tree. So immediately you know that in Aramaic, Jesus is not talking about a list of moral codes of right and wrong. Jesus is opening up for us how every action sits in a context of relationship. And it's in the context of relationship that you discover whether the action is coming into being, sweet, or past its time and rotten and fermenting and going back into the earth. That's one of the other major aspects of the Aramaic language is can't talk about light and dark. Light and dark are Greek concepts that are not found in nature. And I know we use these terms like light and dark. You can't find anything in nature which is only light or only dark. Everything in the cosmos is a mixture of light and dark. And in Aramaic, we talk about a certain time of night with a certain amount of starlight or no starlight or a certain amount of moonlight. And in the daytime, we talk about the day as the sun is at a certain position and it casts a shadow on the ground. And so you begin to understand that there's been this conceptual Greek overlay on an Aramaic Christianity, which was about wholeness, about a unitive vision, about the earth, about the feminine and the masculine as co-partners in creation. And I just use those terms with a little bit of caution, because I don't want us to go to biology. But Aramaic Christianity is really about how everything in us and everything around us and everything in the cosmos are in a ratio of right relationship. And Christianity at its heart is about helping us live in harmony with everyone and everything, from here to the deepest galaxies.
So how do you find that people who can't read Aramaic can best access this portal into a different way of seeing Christianity?
Well, there are many people today who are doing new translations of Scripture and especially the Gospels and trying to put them back into how the Aramaic would have sounded in the time of Jesus. My way is to offer people a way to understand the text in an entirely new way, a way that is not about the patriarchy, a whole new level of human relating. And I like to talk about that. I think that one of the tasks that we have in this century is not about a matriarchy and it's not about a patriarchy, but it's about everyone coming into a vital, new, harmonious relationship with each other. It's a new form of tribe that we haven't had on the planet yet. And there's not one religious tradition, there's not one indigenous people, there is nobody today who has the final answer about this new way of a harmonic relationship with each other. We're all stretching. We're all reaching for it. We're all searching for it. And I think it's the most valuable search for this century is how every gender, and I think there are more than two genders, how every gender, every people, every way of knowing needs to come into a relationship where we listen to each other and learn from each other, but also learn how to be a unique person in a vital harmony.
Your words are so poetic and so true. So thank you for your perspective. And let's go into the four paths now and sort of how the Gospels are archetypal pathways that are more universal than just our lenses on how we awaken spiritually and embody that in our worldly relations, as you so beautifully have said.
So just a touchstone about how all this began to happen for me. I was at the University of Notre Dame in the early 1970s. I was on my way after I graduated to seminary. So I was taking a fair amount of theology, even though my major was anthropology, which is utterly valuable in this work. But in those days, in the springtime, this passionate little professor would come and teach these advanced seminars on scripture as great myth. And this little professor that you had to get special permission to go into these seminars with was somebody named Joseph Campbell. And I didn't know who Joseph Campbell was. This is long before Joseph Campbell became the famous U.S. mythologist. But what he taught essentially in all the courses was there is one myth, what he called the monomyth. There's one story of transformation that's going on everywhere. He would say there's one story in a couple of billion scripts. And he'd say this one story of transformation is always told in at least four parts. And he started me on this journey way back in the early 1970s. He kept saying every great story of transformation is in four parts. And I immediately had the question, could this four part that he's talking about be found in the reason that Christianity came to land on four distinct gospels? So we know that the developers of Star Wars and The Matrix and a lot of the great movies that we've come to love and honor, the hidden director of those movies was Joseph Campbell, because these script writers were making a way to his door to find out how to tell this one great story of transformation. And so here's what Campbell described. He said, in this universal journey, the first part is hearing the summons to the journey. And the second part is when we finally surrender to a yes, is we face tremendous trials and obstacles. And the third part is we receive a gift, we receive a vision, or his language was a boon. And then the fourth part is, having received the vision or the gift, we now have to come back to ordinary life and give it to others, to create it for ourselves and to give it to others. So this great universal story, hearing the summons, going on the journey and facing trials and obstacles, receiving the gift, returning to community to serve the gift. I began to see this first. I saw it in my anthropology work in the Great Rites of Initiation, across the world, across era, across peoples, across tribe. I then began to see it in Christianity. And we know Matthew Fox's work of bringing forward Master Eckhart and the four paths, the via negativa, the via positiva, etc. Then I began to see it in the great mystics of John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila, and then in the spiritual practices of Ignatius, etc. If that wasn't enough, then I went to get my doctorate in clinical psychology. And in my doctoral work, my work was primarily studying how to heal from trauma. And I learned that the healing from trauma follows exactly the same arc of what Campbell had described as the four paths. And it was really this last piece about the trauma literature that opened up the final door, that I understood that the four gospels totally adhere to each of the four parts of the trauma healing journey, which is a metaphor for the universal journey of transformation that we have in the myths of Joseph Campbell, that we have in the work of Matthew Fox, that we have in Teresa of Avila, that we have in all the beautiful work that Mirabai Starr brings forward, and on and on and on and on. So that in my work, I've restated Campbell in the gospel that traditionally has been called Matthew, is really the entire practice of how you face change, which is that first part. It's like Campbell said, you hear the summons, but if it's a great journey, you're going to refuse the summons. That the summons doesn't just come once. It comes knocking at your door many times before you finally surrender into a yes. That is the entire story of Matthew. Matthew is the practice, and ultimately it has a presence in it that gives us the courage to make that surrender into yes. Next part of the journey is trials and obstacles. And for this part, the early Christians were led to choose the gospel that we call Mark. Mark is that practice of how we walk through the valley of the shadow of death by a greater power. In Christianity, we might call it the power of resurrection. But the enlivening power in the trials and the obstacles is not the turnaround. The enlivening power in the trials and the obstacles is perseverance. I can move through this trial 5 more minutes, 20 more minutes, 1 more day. Keep going. Campbell said the third part of the journey is receiving the boon, receiving the new vision, receiving the gift. And the Christians chose the text that we call John. And I call John or the text of Joan, and we could talk about that. I actually have the idea that this text was written by a woman, regardless of the name that was put on it. It's totally feminine. But I call this the text of union and joy, because when we receive the vision or the gift, usually what happens in us is that our hearts expand, and also our egos feel like we've received an answer. That's not on the path. When you're having the third path experience and you think you've gotten an answer, you've fallen into one of the traps. And we'll discover the traps to the third path. But because the third path is going to enlarge us, and there's a part of us that doesn't want to be enlarged, and it pulls back from that enlargement. The fourth path Campbell talked about as the return to community, and I call this fourth path, which we see in the gospel we call Luke, as maturing or evolving into service. That this entire gospel is the practice, underneath the stories, is the practice of how we grow ourselves, evolve ourselves to use the gift in a way that's effective and efficient for ourselves and for others. So there you have it from Campbell's paradigm of the four parts of the universal one journey of transformation happening everywhere, to Christianity's choice of four gospel texts, which they arrange in a sequence, which is not the sequence that we find in the Bible. They clearly knew that they were not giving us four isolated stories of Jesus, no matter how true or beautiful those might appear to be, that they were giving them as one text, one story with four chapters, and that the four chapters are the Christian metaphor for the universal journey of transformation. So in this class, there are two aims to this, and one is, I want everybody, it does not matter your tradition, it doesn't matter your psychology, doesn't matter your gender, it doesn't matter where you are on the planet, there's a map that we all share. And of course, you're going to make that map unique to you. But I also want you to understand that there's a commonality of that map for all of us. We're all on the same journey of transformation. What an incredible new endeavor to have all of our traditions come together and mutually share with each other. What do you know about facing change? What do you know about moving through trials and obstacles, et cetera, et cetera? That we, from all of our traditions, we can share what we know about the four parts of the journey rather than the conceptual thoughts about our tradition. Secondly, I want to enliven people. I want people, which is what I've heard as I've gone around the world and taught this now for 20 years. And people will say to me, you have given the Christian Gospels back to me in a vital new way, a way that I could never have known. And yet it feels so much like I've come home. I want Christians to have a better sense of their own Gospels. And I want all of us to have a better appreciation for the map that lives at the heart of every one of our traditions.
Wow. Well, what an extraordinary transmission you just offered there, and just a whole new lens at looking at the Gospels as this map of deeper transformation. So I would take from that that in a way, sort of like each Gospel is like medicine for a stage of our journey. And so we might gravitate towards different Gospels when we're facing different parts of that. You know, we arc through this journey of transformation in different ways throughout our life. So is that sort of how you approach it? It's like, oh, I'm in a John moment, I'm in a Mark moment, and then you're sort of like really diving into that portal and seeing how it can speak to you.
Stephen, you said that so beautifully, and I love calling each one of these Gospels a medicine, and that's exactly what it is. It's a medicine and it's a map. Because I want people to know that if they're in, quote unquote, the moment of Matthew in their life, the gospel tells us what it feels like, what our thinking is like, and also what are the practices to help us move forward to a yes so we can go deeper in the journey, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a medicine, it's a practice, and it's a support for everybody.
And I imagine on the inverse side, it might be that if we gravitate to just one gospel, we might recognize, oh, I'm a little overbalanced in that way. I know that in a lot of our circles, John becomes so celebrated, and a little bit the other gospels are like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But John is like, oh, the mystical, the most mystical. But actually what I'm hearing is that it's good to have a balance of all those medicines, really.
Absolutely. And especially when it comes to John, I call John the dangerous beautiful. And it is because the energy, when the gift arrives for us, the energy is such a high voltage for most of us. It expands us. Some of us deflate in the face of the gift, but for most of us, we expand in the face of the gift and we think we have the answer. And actually, what happens to us on the third path is we get the energy and the resources to go and live forward a new answer. But unless we're very careful with John, and for unfortunately in Christian history, we see this too much, horrendous abuse, enslavement, and even murder in the face of what people thought was an ecstasy that they must give somebody else without understanding that that ecstasy was not an answer, was not a name, but was an energy to deconstruct the old and then build something truly new.
You know, you reference this as sort of like a way of thinking about spiritual bypassing, where we sort of get into that more exalted or inflated or, but that's not where the work ends. So maybe share a little bit more about how do you navigate that so that you don't sort of get too intoxicated with the more expansive state in a way that actually leads you to enact the shadow side?
In the course, we'll expand this because this is such a critical piece for us to experience in our own uniqueness. And some of us experience the third path very subtly. And unless we are carefully listening and watching and being mindful, we'll actually miss that it even happened. And for others of us, it's so dramatic that we vibrate for days or even weeks. But what we have to do is we have to engage in spiritual practices. And every tradition is going to have their own way to do this. But essentially, just think of you want to step the voltage down. And part of stepping the voltage down in us as humans is to allow ourselves to oscillate, to allow ourselves to go high, to allow ourselves to go low, to allow ourselves to swing back and forth, all the while knowing that we're like a kid on a swing. And if we just let life carry us without making a choice, it will eventually come back to that middle ground swing, where now we've got the energy that we can use to create something that's really grounded and ordinary in our life.
Well, we could just keep going and going, but I want to dive into the practice that you want to do. offer here today. Alexander John is going to guide us into a profound meditation that takes us deeper into the experiential dimension of some of what he's teaching.
So I want to set the context, and we'll be doing this throughout the course. The very core practice that allows the journey to go forward is that we know a place in ourselves which is what I call free and safe. And so if you will simply close your eyes, or if you meditate well with your eyes open, whichever physical posture most allows you to relax, and take a few deep breaths in. My breath teacher is teaching me to count a breath intake of 4 and a breath outtake of 5. So just for a moment, just to practice this 4 count in breath, hold, and a 5 count out breath, hold. In breath, out breath. Once more, in breath, out breath. In this quiet place, I'd like you to see yourself in some place. Maybe it's in your home, maybe it's in nature, maybe it's the forest, maybe it's the ocean, a stream, a field. To imagine your place where you feel free and you feel safe and protected. And just for a moment to look around you at this very special place of your freedom and safety and protection. Is there a sound you hear in this place? Is there a smell? Is there a person, an animal, an object? I want you to welcome yourself in this place of freedom and safety. And in this place of freedom and safety, I'd like you to remember a time in your life where you experienced a sudden, perhaps reversal, perhaps a betrayal, some manner of a loss, something that cut deeply into your heart. And imagine that this moment in your life was like a time of sunset and the coming of evening. See the sun going down. Perhaps the orange hues of sunset, perhaps not. But all the light in the sky is fading. And you are now coming into a time of night. A nighttime where you feel broken open, questioning, wondering. You go deeper into this night. Deeper still. Sounds come out of the night that, where did that come from? Old painful memories. How long will this night last? How long? More loss, more uncertainty, more questions, more desire to know what's the next step? Where am I? How do I get out of here? How do I get out of here? Feel the qualities in your body, perhaps the achiness, the itchiness, the cut into the stomach. And then on the horizon, first light. A moment ago, it was all dark, and now first light. Remember how you came out of that time of loss. Remember the first glimmers of a new answer. The first sense that, this is what this nighttime in my life has been about. Is this first light going to endure? Can I trust it? And it grows and it grows and it grows. And soon you find yourself at a new dawn. Remember that new dawn in your life? Remember the freshness, the relaxation, the aliveness. And then the sun begins to burn bright. And there's much new work to do. There's much new work to create this new life that's come out of the night, come out of the nighttime. Remember that your whole life is like this ongoing cycle of sunset, nighttime, deep night, late night, and finally, first light, dawn. The brightness of day. And oh yes, it will at one point turn again to another sunset. That each 24 hours from sunset to sunset is part of the great map that we've been given of the journey that we all walk together. So with this memory and this map, come back to the place of your freedom and safety. Hold this radiant map in your hands. be grateful that there is a map to life. And we have it in each 24-hour day. And we have it throughout every day of our whole life. Come back to your breath. Again, breathe in on 4 and breathe out on 5. And once more, breathe in on 4, breathe out on 5. And as you're ready, open your eyes and come back together in this space.
Thank you for that, Alexander John. This deeper archetype that you're seeing expressed through the different forms is really such a valuable perspective. And one area that we haven't spent as much time on today that we said we would is really on some of the particularly feminine aspects of the Gospels and the Aramaic stream of transmission, which is connected to the rooting in the natural metaphors that you talked about and the cycling of the day, and so that we're not dissociating from this world, but that we're fully in right relationship with it. So I'd love for you to share a little more specifically about how seeing through this lens evokes a different, more feminine version of the Christian tradition as well.
Like just continuing from the meditation, one of the things that we've lost is that sunset and nighttime is the beginning of the day. Now, most indigenous peoples, most spiritual traditions have honored sunset and nighttime as the beginning, not the end. And one of the things in the recovery of this that we will come to understand is that the nighttime is in some ways a face of the feminine, because the earth in its darkness is seen as the place of beginning, and that darkness in Christianity was put into the image of the Madonna. You see here in my meditation space, the dark Madonna or the black Madonna of Montserrat. And why this is so important is because in Judaism and in early Christianity, we knew that the dark is the womb of God. It's the feminine face of God, and it's the place of beginning. As I constantly am talking about, especially with the Gospel of Matthew and then again with the Gospel of John, that darkness is how things begin, not how things end. That when we are in our dark time, we are in many ways, a feminine time, and we need to make that holy again. We need to take away all the demonization that we put on the word dark and on the feeling dark, and just stop and think about all the ways in the English language we constantly call everything fearful dark. We call everything painful dark. No! Darkness is holy. Darkness is womb time. Darkness is beginning space. And the Gospels bring that home to us in a very, very powerful way, as all of our great traditions do. To start with this recovery of the feminine in Christianity will also be to make re-holy, to make again the darkness as the place of Advent, as the place of wombness. It's only been in the last few hundred years in Christianity that we got the white or the light Madonnas. Up until the period of the Enlightenment, all the Madonnas across all of Christian history were dark Madonnas. Not because of the biology of Mary, but because darkness is the face of the womb, and darkness is the feminine face of our God, and darkness is the place that we need to go to be reknit So that's the first level of the text. The second level of the text is that when we start with the darkness as the feminine, we're a large way on our way to a new unitive vision, where light and dark are not broken apart from each other, where genders are not broken apart from each other, where sexualities are not broken apart from each other. The feminine aspect of Christianity is about an incredible wholeness. And one of the things, Stephen, that we haven't explored yet about my own journey is I come to this as a gay man, and I come to it as an understanding of myself as a gay man, as that having something very, very unique and powerful to add to the understanding of Christianity. That my sexuality is not something that has to be separate from my spirituality, but in this unitive vision where we understand darkness as the beginning, we come into a place where we are rejoining all the brokenness of Western European Christianity, which ended up being extremely dualistic. Now let's heal ourselves as our step about healing the world.
Amen. There's just a pure poetic beauty that pours forth from your lips. Thank you, Alexander John, for this wisdom transmission and really rewiring our understanding of the Christian tradition that has really shaped so many of us in such a profound way that we can come back to it with this fresh, transformative, unitive lens that you're offering. So I think now would be a good time to transition to talk really much more explicitly about Alexander John's upcoming program. So First of all, I want to invite all of you to really seriously tune in with yourself about taking this program. It's clear that there's such a wisdom pouring forth through this beautiful man. And this is really an opportunity to claim a more full spectrum approach to Christianity and also to extend that into how we see all of our world mystical traditions. So the program is called Walk the Mystical Four-Path Journey of Transformation. You can find it at the URL fourpathjourney.com. It's going to be a 7-week program that really builds on some of the concepts that you've heard, but it's a very experiential journey. As Alexander John has said, this is not about just a scholarly, you know, reading of something. It's really about a personal enactment of a journey of transformation. So, Alexander John, I'd love for you to share why do this program? Why are you offering this journey for folks? And then I'll read out the module titles and you can give us a little sneak preview of coming attractions.
So just to reframe again, Stephen, I want to give people a map that I think will be a core map for regardless of whatever tradition you come from or whatever psychology you come from. I was teaching this universal map for 25 years before I discovered it as the heart of the Gospels. So a very simple, elegant overview of a map which can be an effective guide for your life that will help you move from a person of hope to what I think is even deeper than hope, which is trust. So the first module is preparing for the journey, which is going to be an overview of the map and a deepening in what I call the core practices of the journey, which is freedom and safety. People who have worked with me come back over and over again, and I hear this years later, the whole concept of finding that free and safe space in myself where I can go in the midst of tumult and chaos and know everything is okay. It's a great paradox, but it's also a great truth. So that first module is about an overview of the journey and the core practices, freedom and safety. Then we move into the map of the journey. The second module will be about facing change, the first path, and we'll be opening up in a mystical way text from this gospel that we call Matthew. Trust me, you are going to hear these texts like you have never heard them before. And that's going to be true of each one of the modules, as we'll be opening up the texts in the gospel, not in a literal concrete way, but as a universal story that you already know because you're already doing this journey. What I want to do is I want you to help to be mindful of the journey that you're already on. Because when you're mindful of the journey, the energy and the grace of transformation is going to increase. And the third module is going to be moving through trials and obstacles, which is the text that we call Mark. And the fourth module is going to be receiving the gift and the vision. And this is the text of John, perhaps Joan. And it's going to be how we receive the vision and how the vision teaches us that it's not for ourselves alone. Then the fifth module is going to be the second half of the gospel, which is going to be the text which show us about the dangerous beautiful and these traps that we can easily fall into if we're not mindful enough of what this third path moment of expansion brings us, and how the expansion that we so want for ourselves and others can easily slip into an enslavement and an oppression of ourself and others. So then the sixth module is going to be evolving in service in the text of Luke. And it's going to be showing us the practices to move from, I have a vision, to the long work of taking that vision and making it ordinary, making it everyday, making it serve my life and serve the life of my friends and my family and perhaps even my country and the world. Then the last module, we're going to look back over the journey. We're going to name the parts of the journey again. We're going to come back again to how this journey is found in all the great world traditions. We're going to talk about a new paradigm for an interspiritual conversation where we can come together from a unique perspective and share about a common journey and make that the table of our union.
What a fresh set of eyes you bring to the whole spiritual journey and an understanding of the lineages that we've inherited. So thank you so much. And again, you can all you out there can see it at fourpathjourney.com. I'll share a few other things about it. You get not only the 7 90-minute live sessions with Alexander John, which are going to be absolutely profound. You can ask questions, do practices together. You're also going to get recordings, both video and audio of every session, as well as word-for-word transcripts, which are really valuable to work with and study and highlight. So there's weekly exercises and practices, there's a Facebook community, and there's a number of extra bonuses you'll see laid out on the page to really enhance your journey. There's a beautiful short film from Alexander John called Preparing for the Journey of Heart and Mind, Inner Basics of the Journey. There's a PDF excerpt from the book Radical Transformation. And there's a discount actually on the limited edition 2020 hardcover book of Radical Transformation that you'll see on the page there. And there's a special bonus, which is the top 5 sessions from our Mystic Summit. This was one of our most beloved summits in the last year in 2021. It was hosted by Mirabai Starr, and Alexander John himself had a profound transmission dialogue with her and alongside other really beautiful mystics, Matthew Fox, Father Greg Boyle, James Finley, Richard Rohr. Each of these is going to lead you into new openings of understanding of the mystical path, particularly also through the Christian tradition and lens. Alexander John, you want to share anything about that special bonus people get when they sign up by midnight tonight, the 5 sessions from the Mystic Summit?
I think that the hour that I spent with Mirabai is just radiant, and I was so enlivened by her heart and would just welcome everyone to go. And if you do nothing else, go and listen to that hour. I think your heart will be enlarged.
Well, that's a beautiful extra reason to sign up by midnight tonight as a way to really embark on this journey now. We've kept the investment really accessible. It's just 3 payments of $109, or you save 10% when you pay in full with 1 payment of $297. Course is going to start on February 1st. It's going to run on Tuesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, and that also allows folks in Europe to participate. He's going to be teaching from Spain, so that gives a very international feeling to the community that will be created. So I encourage you to go to the page now at fourpathjourney.com. Give it a read, tune in, and if you're getting a yes, then you really have every extra benefit to sign up by midnight tonight because you get those top five sessions from the Mystics Summit. And I also encourage you to give a read through some of the testimonials from folks who have worked with Alexander John. Rob Bell says, let him teach you and you won't see your life the same way again. It's really true. And I feel like we've sampled that in this hour together, feeling the profound, liberating depth of wisdom. So, Alexander John, we're at the end of our hour together. Any final invitation that you want to make to folks to go further with you on this journey?
I want to invite people to make this journey. Many, many, many people around the world have said, without this map, and all of our traditions have it, and it's underneath all of our practices, but to have the map in our hands can truly be one of the things that can be that anchor in many of the storms that we're going through today, individually and planetary-wise. Please join me.
Well, thank you, Alexander John. The depth of your wisdom is just radiant and your heart is beautiful. Again, if you want to go further with Alexander John, you can do so in the upcoming program, Walk the Mystical Four-Path Journey of Transformation. Receive a vital life map to overcome challenges and be inspired anew by the Christian Gospels. And that URL is fourpathjourney.com, fourpathjourney.com. And you get those special five sessions from the Mystic Summit when you sign up today, including a special with Mirabai and Alexander John. So thank you, everybody, and thank you, Alexander John, for a beautiful hour. Onwards.
And thank you, Stephen.